welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll visit with a doctor from the Minneapolis VA healthcare system and learn about Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Company, Medtronic. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General John Jensen.
Our state's Yellow Ribbon Network is an incredible resource as we work to connect service members, veterans, military families, employers, and communities. They help ensure the resilience of those who serve. Started right here in Minnesota, our Yellow Ribbon program is now the model for networks across the nation. Since we proclaimed our first Yellow Ribbon Network in 2008, hundreds more have emerged in counties, cities, communities, and at companies statewide. These self-sustaining networks draw together agencies, community leaders, and volunteers. They strive to support the service members, veterans, and military families of any age and from any era that live and work in their area. The continued growth and improvement of this program is vitally important as service members and their families continue to adapt to increasing demands and training requirements we see across the force. To all of our incredibly generous and dedicated Yellow Ribbon volunteers, thank you. You help ensure our service members and their families remain resilient and ready to serve. If you're ready to join a Yellow Ribbon network near you or make your large company or community Yellow Ribbon, please visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. That's beyondtheyellowribbon.org.
Thank you, General Jensen. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. Joining me now is Dr. Daniel Inat from the Minneapolis VA Hospital here on Minnesota Military Radio. Doctor, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Doctor, I've got your resume in front of me, and a couple of things popped off of there. You've served in the military, active duty, and in the reserves.
Yes, I was in the Air Force for 13 years, active duty, and then in the reserves for another seven.
United States Air Force and the Air Force Reserve, and were you a medical doctor in the reserves?
Yes, the whole time I was a physician. I did my training in the Air Force for general surgery, and then I did my payback as a vascular surgeon.
And then after almost, it must be 20 years, then you out of the Air Force and Reserves on an honorable discharge. And along the way, it appears that, of course, you went to medical school, undergraduate at Rutgers, and medical school at Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri. And it looks as though you've served in a number of VA administration hospitals along the way.
Yes, I've almost always worked at a VA. I worked at the University of Arizona when I got out of the Air Force, and the University of Utah. And during those times, I worked part-time at the local VA. And then now I work full-time at the Minneapolis VA.
And I see, Doctor, that you served at various medical centers in California, Arizona, Utah, Wyoming, Memorial Hospital of Sweetwater County, Rock Springs, Wyoming. I don't know why a guy would want to leave the mountains, but you did in 2014 and arrived in Minneapolis.
Yeah, my wife is from here. I met her in Tucson, Arizona, and I said to her, well, you would never want to move back to Minneapolis, would you?
You got in trouble with that question, Doctor.
It's a great place to raise a family, and I just thought, oh, I will never move to Minneapolis. But here I am, and I'm loving it.
Well, here you are. And, Doctor, it looks like you, when you started out in vascular surgery, and now you're the chief of vascular surgery here in the Minneapolis VA Medical Center.
Yes. Yeah, I've been doing vascular surgery for over 20 years now after training.
Sir, could you explain to us in layman's terms what exactly is vascular surgery?
Well, I'm basically a plumber for the body. I fix any leaking, blocked, or dilated artery pretty much anywhere in the body except for in the heart and in the brain. Hearts, you know, require the heart bypass that's usually done by heart surgeons, and in the brain it's done by neurosurgeons. But big things that we fix dilated arteries in the belly that can rupture, blocked arteries in the legs that can make you lose your legs, and we fix blocked arteries in the neck that can cause strokes.
And, Doctor, I would think because of your military background and the fact that you've served in these VAs that you get a lot of opportunities to fix some of my fellow veterans that are kind of beat up.
Yeah. The big risk factors are, well, part of it is getting older, which you can't do anything about that, but smoking, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, those are all risk factors for getting blockages in the arteries.
So, Doctor, I think we talked off the air a little bit. I'm a Vietnam veteran in the United States Air Force, and a lot of my fellow Vietnam veterans are getting up there in age. I would guess that you see quite a few of those out at the Minneapolis VA.
Yes. Yeah, there's a fair number of Vietnam veterans, and they're kind of coming of age now, or they're getting blood vessel disease bad enough that they need it fixed.
So, Doctor, is that kind of like a research study? You got to take a look at that veteran and check their personal medical history and then start listening to some of their arteries and veins and kind of figure out where he's been, what he's done, and what damage might be there? A little bit of a mystery,
yeah,
Doctor?
So, pretty subspecialized. So usually the primary care doc or primary care provider is referring the patients to us. And it's usually... they find something either on an imaging study that's not causing symptoms, or the patient has a symptom. And the blood vessel disease is a systemic disease, so it occurs throughout the body, but it's asymmetric. It can be really bad in one area and not so bad in another. And so we typically fix it when the risks of leaving it alone are greater than the risk of repairing it. And the incidence of carotid blockages in the neck, when the risk of stroke starts to increase enough that it's worth fixing it, that's when we decide to fix it.
We're speaking with Dr. Daniel Enott, for the Chief of Vascular Surgery from the Minneapolis VA Medical Center on Minnesota Military Radio. Doctor, are there different causes of strokes that could affect people, say, at middle age, and then do they become more and more prevalent as you get older?
Yes. So, probably poorly controlled high blood pressure is the biggest risk factor for strokes, but clotting abnormalities, problems coming from the heart. Most strokes are what we call ischemic stroke, which means a part of the brain dies from not getting enough blood flow. And that could be from small arteries in the brain blocking up, or little bits of plaque breaking off from somewhere upstream and then lodging in the arteries downstream in the brain.
So, Doctor, is the first order of business to try to control that blood pressure and control diabetes and other things like that so that your arteries and your veins stay as clear as possible?
Absolutely. The medical control of the known risk factors is the most important first step, and that's usually done before the patient ever comes to see me by the primary care provider. They've usually been seeing their doctor regularly, and then finally, despite medical care, the blockages get worse. Some patients, smoking is a powerfully addictive substance, and it's difficult to quit. So some people, they're on all the right medicines, but they're still smoking cigarettes, and so the blockages continue to get worse.
So is the smoking directly contribute to the arteries and veins getting blocked? Is that a known fact these days?
Yes, it's the pretty much the biggest risk factor for blocked arteries of the ones that I treat. Yeah.
So, doctor, for our younger veterans that are coming out to the Minneapolis VA, I've been hearing this for 20 years that I've been coming out there, but the doctors say stop smoking. Try to eat right, have a proper weight, and exercise. And can you walk your way out of these troubles?
Once you get severe blockages, they're not really reversible, short of an intervention, a surgical procedure. But you can stabilize what you have. Exercise 30 minutes of aerobic exercise 5 days a week, quitting smoking, eating right. All those are important. There's plenty of data. Some people say, Doc, I've been smoking my whole life. I'm 70 now. What's the point in quitting? And there's actually really good data that quitting smoking, even in your 70s, if you smoked your whole life, there's significant health benefit.
Doctor, I'm glad to hear there's some hope. We have to take a short break. We'll be right back with Dr. Daniel Enat on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking to Dr. Daniel Enat, who is Chief of Vascular Surgery at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. And we've been talking about the fact that some of our veterans have been perhaps a little beat up over the years, and some of my Vietnam veterans are getting up there in the age. And we're talking to the doctor about stroke, and doctor, I understand stroke kills about 140,000 Americans every year. That's a big number, sir.
Yes, it's the fifth leading cause of death in the United States at this point. It's about one every 4 minutes.
Now, doctor, I know that when I come in and see my primary care doctor, that they go through a lot of Q&A and they ask you all kinds of things, but at some point they start listening to your heart. And now that I'm getting a little older, a Vietnam veteran, they usually take the stethoscope and they're listening to my neck. And I think that has to do with my carotid artery. Is that correct, sir?
Yes. So one of the known causes of a stroke is a narrowing in the carotid arteries, and sometimes you can hear a funny whooshing sound the blood makes when it goes through a narrowed artery from the turbulence of the blood flow. And if the narrowing is severe enough, it increases your risk of having a stroke.
So if my primary care doctor hears that and suspects that, then he'd probably make a referral, so I'd come over and see you or one of the other doctors. And How do you confirm whether or not there's some clotting in the carotid artery?
So typically the primary care provider will also order an ultrasound. And if the ultrasound, basically they can tell how fast the blood is moving through the artery. And if it speeds up really fast, kind of like when you put your thumb over a garden hose, the water speeds up from the narrowing, that tells us that there's a severe narrowing. And so the ultrasound is really the main study, and then we can confirm that with either a CAT scan or rarely an angiogram.
So, doctor, are there treatment options at that point, or is it a question of having surgery to clean that out?
So there's kind of three ways of fixing it. The one way is to put you to sleep and do surgery, open up the neck and clamp the artery above and below where the blockage is. The blockage is usually a focal area where the artery branches. One goes to the brain and one goes to the face. You clamp the artery, you open it up, you put a little shunt to shunt blood to your brain while we're working. We scoop the plaque out, make sure it's nice and smooth. We don't leave any flaps or anything, and then we close it up with a patch. And typically people go home the next day, and people typically feel like they're back at their baseline within about a week. And the risk of stroke and death with that is about 1%. So it's not a huge stress on your body, but it's a major operation with real risk. The other way is to stent it, and there's two ways to stent it. The older way of stenting it is to put a straw into the groin and run it up into the artery in the neck, and then open up a little filter that'll catch any debris, and you balloon and stent open the narrowing. With that, there's a higher risk of stroke. So they've come up with a new way of stenting it where we make a small incision in the base of the neck and just put the straw directly in that artery. And then when we're ready to fix the lesion, we can reverse the blood flow in that artery by clamping it and connecting the other end of the sheath to a vein, another sheath in a vein. That reversal of flow is much more effective than the filter at protecting the brain from a stroke, so we can then balloon and stent it. And the risk of stroke and death is the same as it is with surgery. And again, with stenting, overnight hospitalization, most people feel like they're back at their baseline within a week.
So, doctor, you mentioned balloon and stent. Is that the procedure where you insert a stent and then you put the balloon inside of it, and it basically opens that stent up and kind of pushes the blockage out to the exterior of the artery and then holds it there?
Yes, similar. It's what it really does is you first balloon it, and it cracks that plaque open, and it literally stretches the artery out and makes it bigger than it used to be, and it creates then a stable flow channel so that plaque can't ulcerate and break off bits and go into the brain, and then the stent stabilizes it and holds it open.
We're speaking with Dr. Daniel Einot, Chief of Vascular Surgery from the Minneapolis Medical Center on Minnesota Military Radio. Doctor, are there some patients that are best suited for just opening the artery and cleaning it out, and others that maybe they're better suited for the stent?
Yeah, so you need a little bit of working room to put the straw, the sheath, into the artery in the base of the neck. And so for people where the everyone's anatomy is a little different, so people where the carotid blockage is closer to the skull, it's harder for me to reach that with typical surgery, and it's easier for me to do this new stenting procedure. It's called transcarotid artery revascularization, or TCAR. And then the people that their blockage is more in the mid-neck, that's easier for me to get to with surgery. I don't have enough room to do the TCAR, so then those people we typically do the regular surgery for.
So, Doctor, what can our veterans expect from a recovery after they've either had that cleaned out or stented?
So typically, within a week, they feel like they're back at their baseline, and it significantly reduces the risk of stroke, and then we focus again on medical management and trying to quit smoking, get your cholesterol, sugars under control, blood pressure under control, and try to exercise and eat right.
Doctor, I would imagine I've got a lot of buddies that are Vietnam veterans, and they're getting up there in years, and some of them have smoked their whole life, and if they can and they have their carotid artery stented or cleaned out, and if they stop smoking and start exercising and take a look and care of themselves, can they get better? Is it worth the effort?
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of data that by quitting smoking later in life, there's significant health benefits, and changing your lifestyle, all that is significantly worthwhile. And having the procedure done significantly lowers your risk of stroke. And so it absolutely is worth it.
So your message today is never give up, and it's never too late.
That's right.
That brings a lot of hope, I think, for all of our veterans that are out there listening. And, Doctor, you've been at the VA for 6 years or so doing this. Has our VA been recognized as a center of excellence for carotid artery stenting?
Yes, we are a TCAR center for excellence. And to do that, we have to have a reasonable volume of the procedures and have excellent results, and we have that.
And, Doctor, we just got a few seconds left. What would you say to our veterans that are listening today if they're having some trouble and in need of some help?
Well, if you're having symptoms where you're having intermittent weakness on one side of the body or loss of vision in one eye, you need to go to the emergency room right away. If you're not taking aspirin, you should take a little baby aspirin and get to the emergency room, because those are potentially mini strokes, and they're warning signs that you're at risk for having a stroke.
So check with your primary care doctor and let them know how you're feeling, and get to it as soon as you can.
Yeah, and people in their 70s should be seeing a primary care doc at least once a year to check on all their other medical issues.
Very good, sir. I'd like to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
And, Doctor, keep up the great work out at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center, and I hope I don't come across your surgery table any too soon.
Okay. Thank you very much.
That was Dr. Daniel Einot on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to learn all about the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon company, Medtronic. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
Are you interested in serving veterans? Do you strive to improve the lives of others? A career with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs could be the right fit for you. MDVA is continually looking for qualified employees who want to work with our team. One person alone can't accomplish our mission. When you join the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, you are joining a team that is committed to helping serve Minnesota veterans and their families. Whether you are a veteran, family member, or an individual, you can make a difference today by supporting our nation's heroes. We have full-time and part-time positions throughout Minnesota in both the Programs and Services and Veterans Homes divisions. To find current opportunities at MDVA, visit minnesotaveteran.org/careers. MDVA is committed to a policy of equal opportunity and maintains an affirmative action program.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Medtronic became a Yellow Ribbon Company on December 3rd, 2019. And joining us now to help us talk about that is Annette Kuiper, who is the Director of Military Outreach from the Department of Military Affairs. Annette, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. Great to be here.
Annette, can you give us an update? How many Yellow Ribbon companies are we up to now?
We're up to 71 Yellow Ribbon companies, and our latest is with us today. Medtronic became our 71st Yellow Ribbon company last December, and we're so proud to have them as a Yellow Ribbon company partner.
And Annette, I understand we have two guests with us. Would you like to introduce them?
Yes, it was an honor to work with the group at Medtronic, very elite Minnesota company. We're so happy to partner with them as a Yellow Ribbon company. And today I have Rob Clark, who's the Chief Communication Officer, and Justin Furlong, who is a Senior HR Manager at Medtronic and also the Chairperson of the Medtronic Veterans Employment Resource Group. And today they're going to tell us a little bit about some of the things they're doing at Medtronic to become a Yellow Ribbon company.
Very good. Gentlemen, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom.
Rob, I'd like to start with you. I understand you served in the United States Air Force and the Air Force Reserve. And how did you go from being in a bunker with a missile to being the public affairs officer?
It's not necessarily a logical turn, is it, Tom? First of all, let me just start by thanking you, Tom, for giving us this opportunity and for your work to recognize and support our veteran community. I had the great fortune of serving in the U.S. Air Force in the early and mid-90s. Served in a couple of roles. I served as a missile launch officer and ICBM missile officer in South Dakota at Ellsworth Air Force Base, and then had an opportunity and then moved into the public affairs world, working in Washington, D.C. at Bowling Air Force Base and the public affairs officer there, and that's really then becomes the transition into my private sector work in communications, public relations, and community affairs. And so it was a great career, and really enjoyed my time in the Air Force, both on active duty and reserve, departed the reserves in the kind of early, right around 2000. And just really pleased to be able to work with veterans, both in our community, but importantly to our veteran population at Medtronic.
Thank you, Rob. Always happy to have a fellow airman on the show. And your partner at Medtronic that's with you today is Justin Furlong. And Justin, I understand you spent quite a few years in the United States Marine Corps.
Yes, I did. I spent 16 years on active duty and retired in 2015.
And how did you get from there to Medtronic?
When I was beginning my transition from the Marine Corps, I was invited to a luncheon event at Medtronic that the Veterans Employee Resource Group was hosting, and they introduced me to numerous hiring managers and talent acquisition folks that helped expose me to the opportunities.
Very good. Rob, can you tell us, imagine you spent some quality time with Annette in the process of becoming a Yellow Ribbon company.
We did, and we're really appreciative of the designation, really honored by it. And I think it's something that we've known about for some time, and we're very pleased that over the course of the last year, 18 months in particular, we've really been working hard with our senior managers at Medtronic, our senior leadership as well, to really elevate our attention on the veteran, on the needs of the veteran, both of those we're trying to recruit in the company as well as those veterans who are our employees. We have about 3,000 veterans, self-identified veterans that are in our company in the United States. We've got a sizable population of veterans. Some of them, as you can imagine, continue to serve in the Guard and Reserves and so forth. And so really what we've spent our time over the last 2 years, I said, 18 months or so, is just really furthering the depth of our programs, our policies, and our outreach and our interaction with veterans. And that prepared us what we thought was a viable submission to the Yellow Ribbon designation, and just got tremendous support from the state to get us to this point. And like I said, we're deeply honored, and now we're continuing to try to do the good work of earning that designation with our programs and what we do.
We're talking about Medtronic today, a Yellow Ribbon company here in Minnesota on Minnesota Military Radio. Justin, I want to come to you. I understand that Medtronic's done some wonderful things internally to recognize veteran service member employees.
Yeah, that's true, Tom. We have worked hard with our Veterans Employee Resource Group in all of our locations across the United States to look at how we can honor the service and the experience that's unique to veterans. And then we've done some training with some of our hiring managers and some of our senior leaders to help them understand what the value of a veteran is. A few years ago, we were honored to have Ty Carter, the Medal of Honor recipient, attend a workshop with some of our senior leaders to help them also see from an outside perspective what veterans bring to the business in terms of leadership and critical thinking. And that was really a successful event that helped to open the doors for more veterans. Another thing we've done as well is we've hosted numerous workshops where veterans can come in and get help with resume write-in, interview practice, and we help them build their LinkedIn profiles to make them an attractive candidate to employers that are looking on LinkedIn. So we've tried to do our part to help not only our veterans at the company, but veterans in the community that need assistance as well.
And Rob, part of this process of becoming Yellow Ribbon, it gives you an opportunity to network with those 70 other Yellow Ribbon companies here in Minnesota. And you know, the COVID-19 might have slowed that down because we like to have these get-togethers, but I'm sure you and Annette have talked about all of the other firms that are Yellow Ribbon that you can trade best practices with.
No, it's a great point, Tom, and I think we have greatly benefited at Medtronic from the knowledge and the programs and of our peer companies. And some of those companies that stand out, obviously, are 3M and General Mills and Target Corporation in particular. You know, one of the great fortunes that we have in Minnesota is that, you know, some of our employees move from company to company, and with that have come some veterans that have participated in other companies, and they brought that insight into our company as well as just the direct networking with those companies. We are also, as you mentioned, COVID has put a little bit of a damper on in-person meetings, but, you know, we have talked about, and there are opportunities for us, and we continue to pursue and will pursue joint meetings, joint events, where we're collectively bringing our resources together to support veterans. And we're just very fortunate here in Minnesota to have some of the great companies that are committed to this, and it's been a great benefit to Medtronic.
Justin, we've just got a few seconds left in this segment, but do you ask the veterans within Medtronic to self-identify?
We do. We highly encourage the veterans to self-identify. You know, we want to know who we have and how many so we can make sure we provide the resources to assist them in their career.
And I'm sure that's going quite well. And we've seen Medtronic at a few of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation golf events in the past, and look forward to doing some work with you gentlemen in the future. Gentlemen and Annette, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about Medtronic, who became a Yellow Ribbon company on December 3rd, 2019. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking with Annette Kuiper, our Yellow Ribbon lady, and a couple of gentlemen from Medtronic, Rob Clark and Justin Furlong. And Rob, I want to come to you. I understand that Medtronic is the world's leading medical technology solutions company. Can you explain that to me quickly?
Sure, absolutely, Tom. Really, our goal and our mission in life is to alleviate pain, restore health, and extend life for people all over the world. We are a company of 90,000 people scattered in 160 countries around the world, and we get up every day, and really our goal and our mission is to do just that, is to make people more, you know, healthier, alleviate their pain, and correct any condition that they may have, a chronic condition. And so we do that with the application of medical technology, from pacemakers and stents to to disc for the back, whatever it may be that can improve someone's life, we're interested in designing and developing the technologies to do that.
Very good, sir. And I'd like to congratulate you on taking the time and effort to become a Yellow Ribbon company here in Minnesota to support our military and our veterans and their families. Justin, I want to come to you. When you become a Yellow Ribbon company, you make commitments in recruiting and hiring of veterans and service members. Can you tell us what you're doing at Medtronic to fulfill that commitment?
Yeah, Tom. Right now, we're focusing on virtual job fair events. With the COVID pandemic, we haven't been able to get out to the normal events we go to. So we're working very closely with our virtual events, but we've created a partnership with the National Guard in Minnesota to, when they're going through their transition training with the soldiers in the National Guard, we have a recruiter that works with them to help look at resumes and identify possible positions at Medtronic. And then we share the resume and informational interview information with the different leaders in our Veterans Employee Resource Group. And then those leaders take that information and look for jobs that may be a match and try to connect to that transition and service member with an opportunity at Medtronic. And it kind of helps them get a step up on some of the other routes of applying for jobs because we're given a direct connection to that individual by having them apply only on our website. So it helps kind of provide an internal mentor for them to help them get a job at Medtronic. And one other thing we're doing as well is not just our veterans, but our military spouses. We've also made a commitment to helping our military spouses as one of the most underserved communities in the country. We want to make sure that we're supporting them. So our talent acquisitions team is also helping our military spouses when they apply as well.
Well, Justin, I'm sure you're aware we just had about 700 soldiers on the way back from deployment to the Middle East. And we're just sending another 700 over to the Horn of Africa, and they'll be coming back next year. And I'm sure there's a number of soldiers in each of those deployments that will be looking for work. And so I'm sure you're working with Annette to stay up on that.
We are, and we look forward to helping either with finding them a position at Medtronic or helping them prepare to find employment somewhere in the Twin Cities.
Very good, sir. Rob, I want to come back to you one last time. Do you have any, now that you've gone through this and you've become Yellow Ribbon, do you have any advice for other organizations who might be considering becoming Yellow Ribbon company?
Yeah, look, I think that really any company at any level and any size can do this and can be focused. It doesn't take some prolonged sort of introspection here. Just get started. You know, there are things you can do across helping veterans in the community, to your policies and the programs that you have as a company, to recruiting, to just the visible championing of veterans, that with a very solid commitment, those programs can come together very, very quickly and benefit the veterans in your company. And so I think the only other thing I would definitely suggest is that Annette and her team are just outstanding. And so a company that's considering this, you know, there's a lot of advice and mentorship and counsel that Annette and her team can provide them so that they can orchestrate their programs and their policies and approach to reach this status. And I'd say get involved. Take on the challenge. Your employees and the veterans and the types of veterans that you can recruit to your company will make you a better company, and it's well worth the effort.
Very good, sir. Rob, Justin, thanks for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio. And Annette,
thank you,
I
want
to come back to you. Apparently you found some fans over at Medtronic. They think you're doing a wonderful job. What'd you do over there, Annette?
Well, they were already doing many of the things that were required to become a Yellow Ribbon company, so we were so glad we were able to partner in with their great initiatives and things that they were doing to support their military employees and hire. And every time I call on Medtronic for mentors or for resume review or even just volunteers, they have answered the call for help. So we're so grateful for their partnership, and they really are a great example of what a great Yellow Ribbon company can do in Minnesota and beyond, all across the nation.
Well, thank you, Annette. I can't wait to see who you're going to bring in next, but keep up the good work.
Thank you.
That was Annette Kuiper, along with the two gentlemen from Medtronic, Rob Clark and Justin Furlong, on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now is the State Command Senior Enlisted Leader for the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Brian Soper. Sergeant Major, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
You bet, Tom. Thanks for having me on this afternoon.
Sergeant Major, it's been an odd year. We've got this COVID-19, and you've had people quarantined waiting to go on deployments, and we've had a little some extra things we've had to deal with this year, and you're still able to put on the Best Warrior competition.
That's correct. It seems like we've been talking about this forever, but this weekend we're actually going to be putting 8 soldiers through our Best Warrior competition up at Camp Ripley. And it's going to be quite an event. It's been reduced in time, but the scope is still pretty extensive, so they'll be doing a lot of physical activities and doing our new weapons qualification standards and finishing up with a board all in 2 days. So it's going to be action-packed, and we'll put the soldiers through the ringers and have a couple come out. And from there, the
winners,
number one NCO and the number one enlisted, will end up, for the state of Minnesota, will end up going to Illinois and representing us at the regional competition at the Marseille Training Center.
Very good, Sergeant Major. I understand that you've got a soldier that went to some education and ended up graduating from Ranger School. How in the heck did that happen?
You know, that's what we all say, right? But it must be an extraordinary young man. He was at he went down to Fort Benning for the infantry school and, went through basic training and then his AIT, which that in itself has been extended. So it went from 14 weeks to 22. So he was already down there 22 weeks and showed some exemplary leadership and physical traits, where they identified him to participate in a program that you can go directly from graduating your advanced individual training for infantry into the Ranger School. So he started the Ranger School, and that's an additional 61 days. And he is just graduating this week. And in addition to that, we have General Kemper down there from the division, so hopefully we'll be able to get those two together, and he'll be able to give him a coin and kind of congratulate him. But it's a pretty difficult course that most of our seasoned NCOs and officers have difficulty making through. And to have a brand new private essentially go from, being a civilian to graduating Ranger School in less than, 6 months is quite an accomplishment.
Sergeant Major, that sounds extraordinary, and I understand his reward is he gets to join a deployment in the Horn of Africa.
We like to take care of our soldiers. So that was another big thing. So he wanted to make sure that, the unit wanted to make sure, and he wanted to make sure that he would be able to go on that deployment. So once he finishes up, he'll be back here in Minnesota for a few days. And then whatever the time frame is, he'll fly down to Fort Bliss to go through additional training to get him prepared to deploy and meet up with two of the 135 Infantry Battalion that'll be in the Horn of Africa.
Colonel,
it just continues.
Since that's a security mission, I'm sure Colonel Rankin will welcome him, a graduate of Ranger School, to the force.
Absolutely.
It's been a busy time, Sergeant Major. We now have, I believe, the 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team out at Fort Irwin, California. Can you give us an update? How are they doing?
From the individuals I've spoken to, morale is high. I've just got off the phone with their brigade CSM, and we have over 3,700 soldiers, Minnesota soldiers, that are out there right now between our RSG, regional support group that does a lot of the movement of equipment, et cetera. But they're out there, and along with the brigade combat team, and they were doing the first part, which is, essentially arriving, and they go through this reception, staging, onward movement and integration. So essentially they're building combat power to be able to go to the next phase, which is, we call it going into the box. But the next phase where they're going to go and essentially do about a week's worth of force-on-force engagements, offensively, defensively. And this is all in preparation for their deployment next year in support of Operation Spartan Shield in the Middle East. But from everything I've heard, you know, we took some extensive measures regarding, you know, again, this COVID thing, but took some extensive measures at Camp Ripley to ensure that all the soldiers were tested. And, you know, we did the social distancing, et cetera, a bit of a quarantine. Flew them out there, and, you know, we had a couple soldiers that still tested positive once they arrived, but, you know, they have an isolation facility out there that, you know, we're maintaining that bubble for them, and the remainder of the soldiers are out, and they're training, and, you know, we're still screening them to make sure that everyone's healthy, and they're you know, we're not exposing anyone unduly to any risk. So, you know, that's just part of what the measures are that they're taking to make sure all our soldiers are safe and return home safely.
We hope that mission goes well. Sergeant Major, just got a few seconds left, but I understand the TAG, the Adjutant General, met with a Special Advisory Council last weekend.
No, that's right, Tom. We have what we call the JOTAC, which is the Joint Officer Enlisted TAG Advisory Council. And the whole purpose is, and it's been around for a few years, but we allow the junior officers, junior enlisted, from both the Army and the Air to come together and come up with some topics that they want to present white papers on at the end of about a year's worth of work to the Adjutant General. And it's, you know, it's pretty much whatever they come up with, they can present to them. And the idea is, you know, we get to hear, you know, how we're doing from that junior officer enlisted and warrant officer perspective from both the Army and Air, and, you know, potentially be able to incorporate some different things into the organization to continue to make us better.
That's got to provide some great communication and feedback for the Adjutant General to use to make some of his decisions.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's not often when you're a young soldier you have that audience with a two-star general. So, well, much less a command senior enlisted leader, but and then it's also the chief warrant officer, Command Chief Warrant Officer Jensen, and Command Chief Master Sergeant Rukavina is also participating in this council.
Sergeant Major, thanks for joining us again today.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
That was Command Sergeant Major Brian Sofer, the State Command Senior Enlisted Leader. We're just about out of time. If you're a Minnesota veteran and like to share your story, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Dr. Dan Einot, Rob Clark, and Justin Furlong from Medtronic, Annette Kuiper, Command Sergeant Major Brian Sofer, Commissioner Larry Herkey of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen. Please join us next week as we check in with the command team of the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division and learn about the American Legion going virtual. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.